Welcome to the Sunday night. There is a Solution Newcomer and Turning Members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. The meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at awayontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The link will be posted in the chat. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Rocky M. I forgot where you're from. A compulsive overeater from Idaho? I think it's Idaho, right? Anyways, welcome,
Ohio.
Rocky. Ohio, welcome.
Thank you. All ready to go? Here we go. Okay. Hi, I'm Rocky. I'm a compulsive overeater. Thanks for having me. It is a privilege to be asked to speak here or any Overeaters Anonymous meeting. I owe a debt to OA that I'm not sure how I can ever repay. But doing things like this is one of the ways that I can try to give something back. I've been asked to talk about my recovery, and especially as it relates to how I work to I'm sorry, how I work the 12 steps. To qualify, if I make it to tomorrow. Tomorrow will be my OA anniversary, birthday, whatever the right terminology for this group, and it will be 5 years of abstinence. I first started coming around OA about 8 years ago, I think 8 or 9 years ago, and started coming to meetings. Got abstinent the best I could at the time. What I was doing at the time for a few years was not what I would consider abstinent for me now, but I kind of didn't know what I didn't know. And it just wasn't, what feels now like half measures. I didn't know it was half measures at the time, but it kind of wasn't clean. It was, people who I was working with, talking to would talk about things like imperfect abstinence, and that today doesn't quite jive for me. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but at the time, I was doing the best I could. Before coming into OA, the top weight that I am aware of is 510 pounds. I have lost well over 250 some pounds. I am tall and I am big. I am within about 20 pounds of the body weight where my doctor wants me. And that part is important to me because I think it's important that I get someone else's viewpoint, someone else's expert experience in a topic that I have proven that I don't have good answers on my own. So things like that, things that, like an eating plan. I have asked other people who don't have the rationalizing mind I do. I can rationalize myself into trying to convince me or you or anybody else that, gee, I'm big, I'm tall, I can carry 400 pounds or whatever. So what I need to do is ask somebody else and get expert opinion and say, you tell me what I should do. So anyway, that 510 pounds is interesting because I have an interesting reaction to that. And it is that partially I think of, gosh, I've made a lot of progress, and it's an ego boosting sort of thing. Another part of me, and I think that it's interesting that sort of seemingly contrasting emotions can exist at the same place in the same time. Another part of me says, God, you are such a slob. You are such a fat slob. What I realize now is both of those are ways for me to try to set myself off as exceptional in some way or another. And I remember one time I understand that top weight, not because I remember it or paid any attention to it, but because my wife and I were moving and we were getting rid of some old files. And one of those files was from an old physical. And that was the weight that was on there. It was the highest weight that I saw and I was aware of. I may very well have been more than that. I don't know. But I was in thinking that and seeing it, I was just kind of blown away that it got that bad. And then again, thinking of myself as exceptional in some way. Within 2 or 3 days at the most, I was on another meeting and a guy was sharing and he said, you know, and remember my top weight was 5'10". This guy said, yeah, my top weight was 511 pounds. Oh, so the universe is telling me there's nothing exceptional about me. So I understand that. And you know, it really, and I do understand. I understand much better now that it really has little to do with the number on the scale. Yes, it's about the relationship with food. Doesn't mean that it's 200 pounds overweight or 2 pounds overweight. It's about my relationship with the food. But at any rate, it was food was my first, not my only, but my first drug that I used to get some comfort when I needed it as a kid. There was not a time in my life that I remember not being overweight. I was always, always, always overweight. And it was always kind of front and center in my mind. What can I do about it? I'm like millions of other people. Again, nothing exceptional. I'd go on a diet for a while. I'd gain it back. I'd do this fad diet, that fad diet, and it would come back and nothing worked until 5 years ago when I found a friend here. I am also in another 12-step program, and a friend who I knew from that program and this one, and he was getting good results. He's my friend, my very good friend, Garrett M. And I said, Garrett, what are you doing? And he introduced me to a group, some meetings. And what it turned out is what I didn't have before this was a group of meetings in which people take overeating as seriously as I had to take my alcoholism. And so, and it was different and it was serious and it was not fat serenity. And it just showed me what I needed to see. And he also introduced me to a group of men who eat in a way and hold each other accountable that has been very, very, very valuable to me. And part of that, in terms of what we do, is we make no unilateral food decisions. My eating plan was created in tandem with my sponsor, who eats the same way, and basically it's an imitation. I believe one of the best things I can do in any form of recovery is imitate, and it's imitate someone who has had success. And has serenity and has peace around food. Okay, show me what to do. I've proven that my best ideas got me to 510 pounds. Show me what to do. I'll do it. Surrender. You know, the first admitting I was powerless over food. And so I did that. Tell me what to do. I'll do it. And that is how I eat. I eat in a defined way. I commit my food in advance. I take pictures of my food and send it to a couple of threads of guys who eat in the same way. I have a sponsor. I have sponsees, and I do service at the group level, and that seems to be working right now. And I don't have any reason to believe that it's not going to keep working for me in the future. But what is important to me as it relates to the steps is it was the first step for me was relatively easy. I had done the first step before. I worked the first step. I had worked the steps as thoroughly as I could a couple of different times in my other program. Admitting powerlessness and unmanageability were not particularly difficult to me. I had physical proof. I had health issues caused by my weight. It was there was objective evidence there. So first step, admitting I'm powerless, looking at unmanageability, coming in the door, that was relatively easy. Now, working that day to day looks like following that food plan that's prescribed. As soon as if I were to start thinking, oh, I've got a better idea, I can add a little bit more of this, a little bit of that, making those decisions unilaterally. Again, a guy who has proven that he doesn't do decisions well when it comes around food, then I'm taking some of that power back. I'm not embracing the powerlessness. And I've come to believe that that intersection of surrender and acceptance and admitting powerlessness, I think that is sacred ground. I think that is the that's the platform from which I was able to launch to do something different. Had to get there in order to get somewhere else. I could not go anywhere without getting there first, in my experience. And then the second step for me has been a has been an interesting process in my recovery because I have no trouble at all imagining that there is a power or many powers greater than I am. What I have struggled with over the years is spending time trying to define that higher power and trying to figure out, I grew up in a church that I do not follow anymore. And so I sort of have this idea of, okay, these are things that don't seem to make sense, but what does make sense to me? And eventually I got to the point, I was kind of making no progress when it came to trying to figure out what did make sense and how to define higher power. And I came to the point where I thought to myself, and I don't know how I got there. Reading, studying, talking to other people about this. I didn't arrive there on my own, but the thought came to me that what if my spiritual practice was admitting that I have no idea about the definition of a higher power, and the spiritual practice can be accepting the fact that I have no idea. So, in terms of the second step now, my prayer every day is to be released of the need to define my higher power because I can't. Other people may be able to, but I'm not. I am not able to define my higher power. And so that really felt right to me. At this, sometimes I think of myself, that's great. I think of myself as an inherently lazy guy. I think, oh, I don't have to do that. There's work I don't have to do. I'm relieved of that. That's great. So I don't spend a lot of energy trying to figure out what it is and whether it is a some superhuman power separate from me, or whether it is something that's inherently inside of me and everybody else. I was about to say, I don't care. It's not that I don't care, it's that I don't believe that I will know, maybe in this lifetime. Maybe I will someday. I'll let you know. I'll let you know if I get it all figured out, and I'll share that great wisdom with you. But I kind of don't anticipate that that's going to happen. So that in terms of the second step, that is, I believe there is a power greater than me. I believe the 31 of us here in this room, in this virtual room, is a power much greater than I am. It's easy for me to see that there is a power or many powers greater than I am. I just don't know what the hell it is. And that's fine. Making a decision to turn my will and my life over to that power, that is a, to me, a constant. That to me is not a single, wow, I've done it. That feels great. I'm great for the rest of my lifetime. It hasn't worked that way. To me, that is a repetitive task, turning my will and my life over to the care of God. Because what I believe is that anytime I am living in fear, and for me, fear is the foundation of virtually every character defect that I have. Fear of financial insecurity, fear of whether you like me, fear of whether I'm doing a job well. Fear is the foundation of virtually every character defect for me. If I have that kind of fear going on in my life, in my head, in my heart, then what I don't have is faith. Those two, for me, displace one another. Fear and faith displace one another. And if I am living in fear, then by definition, I am not living in faith. And faith is turning my will and my life over to a higher power to say, take it. I don't know what to do here. In reality, in a perfect world, I think about the serenity prayer. It would be living 100% of the time. Perfect faith, perfect work of the third step would be living in serenity and accepting the things that I cannot control, which is essentially anything outside of me. When I'm trying to control, when I'm living in fear, I am not living in faith. Therefore, I'm not living the third step. So what do I do if I am looking at fear? I'm looking at a fourth and fifth step and a tenth step related to it. I'm going to, in my head, sometimes it's quick, sometimes it's an instant, oh, here's what's going on here, I get it. Yeah, here's what I do to correct it. But it's an inventory. It's an inventory process. And sharing it with someone else, saying, here's what's been going on in my head. Here's what it's all about. Here's what I'm thinking about. In terms of that, in terms of that inventory, it is much more often a tenth step than a formal fourth and fifth. But there are times when I, if it gets bad enough, if it gets bad enough for me to put pen to paper, then I'm always going to share that with somebody. But that's what I need to do. If I catch myself in fear, if I catch myself in faith, if I catch myself in irritation, any of those kinds of places that that cause me trouble. I think I said faith. If I catch myself in fear, irritation, ego, all of those, then it's a matter of some version of inventory, even if it's 10 step spot check. It is, okay, what's going on here, Rocky? What are you afraid of? What do you do about it? And then importantly, what is the action that I need to take? So just thinking about it usually doesn't work for me. Usually it's a matter of taking some kind of action, contrary action, something, because if I got in trouble for the thoughts that go through my head, I'd be in jail for the rest of my life. But it's the actions that matter. The actions. So what do I do if I don't want to feel this way, if I don't want to feel this fear, what do I do? Often it's talk to someone else, pray, write, any of our nine tools, all of our nine tools, depending what it is and what's going on. And then, of course, I've got a sixth and seventh step, ask for those things to be removed. Again, that can be for me a repetitive task. It is not necessarily one of the things I always think about in the seventh step is what is not there. Humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. It does not say humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings and that will happen immediately. It doesn't promise me that. It is, and in fact, it doesn't even say that they will be removed. I'm asking, doesn't say they're going to be removed. So maybe there is some reason, maybe there's something going on that I need to accept. But I do need to ask. I do need to ask. And again, I don't know what, who. I don't know what I'm asking when I'm doing that, but it is, may this defect be removed because it's eating my lunch today and I don't want it to. Making amends was interesting. In Overeaters Anonymous, it wasn't particularly difficult, but it wasn't instinctive to me to understand. For me, when I first worked the steps in my other program, it was pretty easy to see the damage I had done to people. I didn't see it quite as easily until working with a sponsor. And again, that's where I belong in the steps. I belong hand in hand with my sponsor. But it is understanding things like my eating. Was not the harm caused by my eating was not confined to just me. I hurt other people by diverting money that could have been used elsewhere. I hurt other people by causing them concern about my health. I can get to the, I can easily think I caused harm to some anonymous person sitting next to me on an airplane who was miserable because I was so big. All of those things, it took me a second. It took a little bit to say, oh, yeah, this was affecting other people. This wasn't just me. Some of those, you think about the stranger on the airplane. I don't know how to make direct amends, which is what the ninth step talks about. I don't know how to make direct amends to him or her. But what I can do is live in a way that I don't do that any longer. After all, that's what amend means. It means to change. And I can change my life so that the behavior does not affect people that same way anymore. And then where I can make direct amends to family, friends, for those things that we talked about, and any other, and sometimes is behavior just related to being an addict, being a junkie with food like I was. There was behavior that was part of it too, not just the health concerns, not just the diversion of money that could have been used other places, but those things are important. Again, it's got to be direct. 10th step, continue to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. That is, 10, 11, 12. I hope and I try to be living in those daily. We talk about them, you've heard them referred to as maintenance steps. I hope that I'm living in those daily. I hope that I'm 10th to me is a lot about just being conscious. Before recovery, this is almost hard for me to describe, but I was just tuned out. I wasn't, I think I was a generally a nice guy. I wasn't harming people intentionally, but I had no, very little contact with my own emotions. I was just kind of living life on the surface, is the best way that I can explain it. The 10th step, the 11th and 12th, to me, are about kind of being present and mindful in my life and paying attention to what's going on and then taking action and doing something about it. So those kinds of things are very important to me. And I think what gets me there, or hopefully gets me to that place of mindfulness and attention, and I hope that it translates to consideration of others, patience and tolerance, and love, purity of intention. What gets me there, I hope, is the 11th step, is prayer and meditation. And that the word in the 11th step, the word conscious, conscious contact with God, that's important to me. I can, at times, and it's not infrequent, honestly, I can find myself doing my morning prayers and realizing that it's pure rote, that there's no thought, there's no intention about it. And I have to slow myself down and think about, okay, what do these words mean that I'm saying, rather than just kind of zip through what I say every morning. When I ask for abstinence and sobriety, and I ask for to be show me how to be of service, I do have a specific list of some people that I pray for. Again, I don't know what I'm praying to. I ask for blessings, and I ask for, again, that release of the need to define my higher power. But I do that prayer and meditation, improve my conscious contact with God. And I really appreciate the "as we understood him" phrase there. I think that has been important to me, because as you said, I could almost say, as I don't understand him, and maybe I never will. But that's I appreciate that about the 11th step. And the 12th step, I think, is always the 12th step is powerful, man. I think when we think about the 12th step, honestly, most that I hear it being discussed, it's about service. And service is huge. It's big. The fact that guys seem to want some of what I have, and I've had the ability to sponsor some guys, that's extraordinary. But I think what I gloss over often is that very first few words, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. How's that for a promise, man? You do this stuff, you're going to get a spiritual awakening. Oh, well, that's pretty cool. It's kind of like the 9th step promises, in the big book. These are the things that will happen before you are halfway through with your meds. But that 12 step promise, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, that's extraordinary. So I've had spiritual awakening. Now it's my responsibility to share that with other people, and it's to serve other people. And it's also my responsibility to practice these principles in all my affairs. That covers about everything. That hopefully gets me to a point where I am living a life of integrity, and I'm living a life in a way that not only means that food is not my primary driver, is not my higher power, is not my source of comfort, is not my source of medication for feeling something that I don't want to feel. That's great. All of that is extraordinary. But I'm fortunate enough now to have food neutrality the vast majority of the time. I can see people eating things that are difficult for me, and it doesn't necessarily trigger me. It doesn't make my life any more difficult. That's amazing, and that's what a gift that is. But so if I've got that, if the food is not an immediate problem right now, what do I do? Oh, the 12th step tells me I still have a responsibility to serve others and to practice these principles in all my affairs. Okay, I'm not finished just because the food isn't knocking on my door tonight. There are other things that I have to do in terms of serving other people. So that's how the steps work in my life today. I hope they continue to, or maybe I hope I learn something new, more and more about them as time goes on. But it looks like that's about my time, and I think I can wrap up then. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rocky. Appreciate you.